I'm Chris, and I guess this is Panels Full of Hunks. This is our Monster of the Week spinoff, where we many, many years ago covered the Supernatural comics, the not-so-great Supernatural comics. Sadly, I have to go it alone on this one, but if this is the first time you've heard me, I'm putting this out on the main Monster of the Week podcast feed because it's Supernatural related. If this is the first time you've heard me in a while, I don't just sound like this all the time now. I have just recently lost my voice. We're fighting our way back, so I apologize for that. But if you haven't checked us out in a while, thank you for coming back. I recommend you take a look at maybe some of the stuff that I posted on the feed over the last 6 months, if you aren't aware. But anyway. So Supernatural, they released a Supernatural comic book in the year of 2025, long after the show has ended now. But I don't know if this was like a licensing thing. Like we gotta keep the license active. We gotta use it for something. You know what? It's pretty cool. You know, it's nothing groundbreaking, but when I first heard this being announced, I was a little taken aback by it. And I finally decided to give it a shot, to check it out. And I'm pretty pleasantly surprised. This is Supernatural. That's the title, Supernatural 2025. This is by Greg Pak and Eder Messias. This is pretty cool. I enjoyed this first issue quite a lot. This takes place between like the era of season one, season two, not between seasons one and seasons two, because in between those seasons, Sam and Dean were lying on the side of the highway. Nothing else was happening. I don't know if these are going to be kind of one-shot Monster of the Week type issues where each issue is kind of just its own little episode, sometimes in season one, sometimes in season two. Not quite sure yet. I've only read the first issue. But this very much did capture the tone of those early seasons, and I was actually quite surprised to get that. Totally matching the tone of something like Supernatural in a different format. It can be a little weird. It can be a little iffy. The previous set of comics did not seem to understand the source material whatsoever. But I felt like as I read through this that they kind of did. They kind of understood it. Now, this isn't going to like blow your mind. This isn't going to change the lore as you know it or anything like that. Unlike the previous comic books from, I don't know what year those came out, 2005, 2006, something, you know, early mid-aughts. Those were wild. Those came out before a lot of canon was actually established. John Winchester, like, murders Mary's brother or something, or he gets killed. I don't know. It's pretty wild. We recorded about that, about those issues, I don't know, years ago at this point. To us, those were always some of our funniest episodes. They were so ridiculous. And since Jeremy passed away, those have been the only ones that I have thus far been able to revisit, and they made me laugh. It made me laugh to, you know, happy to hear his voice again and just think about all the stupid jokes we made on those episodes. So I recommend you go give those a listen. And I mean, without further ado, I can kind of get into this. I think first we gotta look at, you know, the artwork. I quite like the art style on this. I think the characters don't exactly look like Jared and Jensen, but they look enough like Sam and Dean that you get the idea. Going too far into like real person likeness can get a little iffy. I've read a lot of Star Wars comics recently, and there are some issues where you know what Luke Skywalker looks like, you know what Darth Vader looks like, that's totally fine. But there's one particular artist who just seemingly draws over real photos of people, and the art style is very off-putting. It's very realistic, but it's very off-putting. So I'm certainly glad that they didn't go for any kind of hyper-realism here. Sam and Dean do look like comic book characters, but it's fitting. The artwork is consistent throughout, which is always really good. Sometimes things can get a little iffy. But yeah, they look like comic book characters. They both look like at any minute they could tear off their shirt and turn into Superman. But yeah, so I was pleasantly surprised just immediately stepping into this. It gets the tone right in terms of color, of like shading, of character design. They aren't perfect. They aren't one-to-one recreations of the show, like I said, but it feels like season one, season two Supernatural. You know, when everything had that like ridiculous blue filter that I have come to really love over the years. This comic issue seems to almost have that same thing. But I'm going to break this down just like we used to do on the TV show. So we start in Windler, Michigan, and we see a man named Richie. He's celebrating something. We don't know what he's celebrating. And he's being scolded by his wife, Gloria. We hear her like yelling from inside the house, and we see him step outside onto the porch. He's got a bottle of whiskey or something in his hand. It seems that he's a bit of a drinker, and that seems to be a big source of issue between this couple. He steps out for a drink. He stumbles down the stairs, and then he opens up the bottle, or the bottle pops open as he falls, the bottle of whiskey that he's carrying. And suddenly he catches on fire. Shit escalates extremely quickly. These are some really dynamic panels. This is just, I mean, Supernatural. It's got those classic cold opens. X-Files does the same thing. They're very similar, but this, you know, just ending that quick cold open with something really dramatic. And this is a really dramatic image of a person on fire in front of their house. It's a strong start to this panel. So I was like, all right, here we go. We're locked in. This is season one. When we spend a lot of time with a random character that we'll never meet again. I kind of miss that. I kind of loved those episodes. But yeah, and then straight over to Sam and Dean. That's our cold open. Cut to Sam and Dean. They're in a diner. Like I said, they don't totally look like Jared and Jensen. But if you're a Supernatural fan, you certainly immediately know who they are. Sam, I feel like, is always easier. Like, they've done the anime. They've done the prior comics. I feel like Sam is a little easier simply because he has long hair, I guess. Like, he has like a specific look to him. Whereas Dean's look, although he does have his outfit, I'll say that Dean's, he has a leather jacket. He's usually had that like blue shirt open with his necklace. Dean did have an iconic costume, so that's true. But I just feel like so much of Dean's iconic look is just carried by how handsome Jensen Ackles is. Whereas Sam, it's like, okay, yeah, he's a dude with floofy hair. He's really tall. He's floofy hair. You get it. Okay. Anyway. So we, you immediately recognize that it's them, and we're picking up where Dean is coming back to their table at this diner because his card was just declined and he's asking for Sam's card. Every sentence on this page ends with the word bro. I don't know if they're trying to establish for the audience that these guys are brothers, but it feels like they're just being funny. There's a lot of jokes in this. There's a lot of humor in this. It didn't annoy me. Like, quippy one-liners annoy the shit out of me. But this didn't have that. It just was like, oh yeah, this is totally how Sam and Dean like banter with each other. Like, they're always a little bit annoyed with each other, but they love each other. They're always kind of smiling, kind of laughing. Like, it just, it perfectly fits. And Dean is very much acting like season one, season two Dean. Like, he's being a little bit silly. He's talking, or he's trying to get the waitress's number. Like, that's this whole thing. And then meanwhile, Sam is brooding for all he's worth. Nothing else. So Sam has given Dean a hard time about flirting with the waitress or whatever. And Dean is like, well, I'm sorry that everything sick in this life gives you the sads, I think is the exact quote. And Sam is like, yeah, living, that'd be awesome. All I have to do is forget. And then it's a hard cut to Jessica burning on the ceiling. You were not getting through any piece of Supernatural media without seeing Mary or Jessica burning on the ceiling. That's just part and parcel. That's coming with it. But if you just, that's real, real angsty Sam here. I love it. We got kind of ridiculous Dean and angsty Sam right next to each other. It's perfect. It's a perfect combo. These are my boys. These are my guys. It feels so strange to talk about Sam and Dean. It's been so long since I've done this, and it feels really weird to be doing this without Jeremy, I'll tell you that much. But we're not here for me to get sad again. We're here to talk about comic books. So we go through a couple panels where Sam is kind of reliving the memories, as he often does in season one and two, when this is, you know, forefront in his mind. And at this point, we see the real Dean come out. He sees that Sam is actually sad. He stops busting his balls, and he's actually like checking on him to be like, hey, dude, are you okay? And Dean assures Sam, like, hey, dude, I know you really want to find this thing that killed Mom, that killed Jess. We're going to find it. We're going to shank it, is what he says, which is just a classic Supernatural verb. Shanking, ganking, all those sorts of things. It's very, very early 2000s. And I appreciate that this comic book captures how bad some of this dialogue was in the early Supernatural seasons. Maybe it's just because it's been so long since I've seen those seasons that this was like really like scratching an itch for me that I didn't know I had. But Sam starts to sense that something is happening nearby. And I'll be real with you. I remembered Sam having demon powers, but I kind of a little bit forgot that it just kind of starts with psychic visions. So he seems to be having some sort of a psychic vision about something going on nearby. And so, again, classic Supernatural, they're like, well, all right, we better just hit the road. He kind of rushes Dean out of the diner, and we move on to the next section. And we finally get our cover page, which I really like. We get a look at what I think is the Impala. But and then, like, a couple scenes later, they're talking about how Dean had to hide the Impala. I can't tell. It's just a drawing. It looks like the Impala to me. I'm a little confused here. They go on to talk about how they had to steal a car. Maybe I misunderstood something. But it looks like they're driving the Impala here. We get our title page. Two brothers in a family stalked by horrors have now sworn to hunt everything supernatural. It's honestly, it's kind of cool. Dean looks like Batman, and Sam looks like a sad little girl in this panel. But otherwise, I mean, I'm totally down. I'm totally down with it. It's a cover page. We nailed it. Dean's like swerving down the street, by the way. I don't really know why. I thought it was the Impala. It sounds like it's not the Impala. It's a whole thing. They say it's a stolen car. I don't know. If you read this, you got to tell me. Doesn't that look like the Impala? We get a perfect brothers in the car moment. Like, the panels are just like they would be in the TV show. It's a lot of fun. Them just going back and forth about how they had to hide the Impala. And Dean is like, oh, Sam, don't tell him me to Dad. Dad's going to be pissed that I had to go hide the Impala somewhere. And I'm over here like, I thought you were in the Impala. What is going on? And Sam is like, I don't even know where our shitty dad is. I can't tell on you to him. I don't know where he is. And they start getting into the like, oh, you know, Dean, besides, didn't you win any favor with Dad by hunting him with him while I went off to college? And Dean immediately cut into the bone is like, no, dude, nothing is ever good enough for John. Nothing's ever good enough for our dad. Of course I didn't win any favor with him. He still, I mean, as we know, as the audience know, somehow John still liked Sam more than Dean, even though Sam was a little fuck up and Dean was the one who did it. Okay. Anyway, they pull up to what I think we later learn is a brewery. This is in the same town as the cold open, but it's not the spot where we saw the thing in the cold open happen. Same town, different location. There was also a fire here. They drew a wet pipe factory. There is a literal wet pipe factory in the distance. We will later find out it's a brewery, but I just thought, you know, that, wow, how fitting. First issue, they know. It's like they know. They know. They were Monster of the Week listeners, clearly, and they knew they had to put a wet pipe factory in their comic book. Sam denies seeing this place. This actually wasn't their destination. It seems like maybe they were just driving by it and saw it. And Sam's like, yeah, didn't dream about this place. What I saw was a guy burning alive in his yard. And finally, on the next page, we do get over to the yard, to the location of the cold open. So what I think that Sam and Dean were probably doing off page was investigating, like, okay, you read something in a newspaper, you find out a little information about the guy who actually did die in this strange way, and do a little research, find out where he works. They find where he works, find that there was also a fire there, but then after they have that information, they can now pretend to be from that company to come and check on this man's widow. So they get to the house where this took place. They see this woman, Gloria, from the cold open. She's outside. She's cleaning up because, you know, her husband burned alive outside. So there's a little bit of a mess. She's got to clean that up. They claim to be, of course, Agent Roth and Halen, sent by the company that her husband worked for. Again, which is a brewery. So there's a lot of this. I'm just a little confused about some of these details. I didn't know that breweries had agents that checked. You know, it's not important. It isn't important. So Sam kind of gets roped into like helping the woman clean up. While Dean goes around to check stuff with an EMF, see if this place is orbing like crazy. And Sam does what he does best. This is something that they really shied away from in later seasons, which I think was a mistake. Because Sam and Dean were very good in seasons 1, 2, 3. They were very good at harassing widows, harassing grieving fathers. They were so good at that. And that's exactly what Sam does here. He's like, yo, lady... Sorry to be forward, but you kind of hated your fucking husband, didn't you? Because he's like, he says something along the lines of, you don't seem like all that shaken up about all this, to be honest. Like, your husband burned alive on your front steps. Like, let's just be real here. What's going on?" And she explains that her husband worked his ass off for this company for 12 years, never got a raise, made millions for his boss, but they were forced this entire time to live in poverty without, you know, any improvements. And therefore her husband started drinking, and it caused a lot of strife in their relationship. And she even believes that it was, in fact, this cheap liquor that he was drinking that caused this event. And this event is being called spontaneous human combustion. That's what the cop said. That was the only explanation that made any sense. And immediately Sam does not think that makes sense. So cut to them again later at a diner. This is classic Supernatural. We've been in like four locations already, and they're just talking in all of them. It's perfect. Cut to them at the diner. They're discussing the situation. And Sam is like, "Dude, spontaneous human combustion isn't a thing." He says, "Dean, I don't know if you've been paying attention, but Dean says, this is a brilliant line. Dean says, "I don't know if you've been paying attention, but a lot of things that aren't a thing turn out to be things, Sam." Whoa. What a line. A lot of things that aren't a thing turn out to be things. That's Supernatural in a nutshell. I'm just a little confused as to why Sam wouldn't believe in spontaneous human combustion. Although, no, you know what? I think actually, as you get through the scene, he is saying, like, there's no way it's that simple. Like, this is clearly a demon or something. I don't really know who's on which side of the argument here. So maybe this comic's not as good as I thought, because we're getting a little lost in the sauce. But he's like, "Yeah, dude, this is some horror. This is not science." But Dean is like, "Dude, you know, I feel you, but I checked for EMF readings and there was nothing. Didn't hit on anything here." So they head outside. Sam pulls out Dad's diary. You know, if he's going to be reading anything, he has to be sprawled on the hood of a car. Otherwise, he's just, you know, he's not going to get his reading in. And he starts reading off entries about demons, dragons, salamanders, anything that involved fire. Sam's trying to get some information on it. And just then they are confronted by a woman named Effie. She seems like well put together, of this blonde woman, flashy sunglasses. And she says she actually works for the company of the deceased. And so instead of trying to like pivot or anything like that, Sam and Dean just keep up their lie. They just keep saying, "Oh yeah, we work for the company too. We were sent." And I don't know if, you know, at this point, is she just going along with it because she was actually expecting somebody to be sent out to look into this. Or if she knows that they're lying and she has some ulterior motive. Sam suspects that she might be onto them. And Dean, of course, suspects that she might be into him. But this woman, Effie, she tells the boys to follow her to the site of the fire, to what we'll later find out is the brewery that they drove by earlier. And they can, corporate's looking into it. Let's see what's going on. So we get over there. We learn that this place has been shut down since the fire. Everyone's been sent home, so they're free to kind of look around. But the fire itself seems to have started in the lab. I don't know. Honestly, I don't know. I don't work at a brewery. I don't know what they're cooking up in that lab. But apparently that's where the fire happened. And the fire took place a day after Richie died. So Richie, he catches fire at his home. And then the next day, his place of work catches fire. The specific spot where he worked catches fire. And while they're kind of looking around this seemingly now abandoned building, Dean gets an EMF hit. He gets it off of a bottle of liquor on the ground. And this scene takes a totally unexpected turn when Effie, this woman, she recognizes the EMF detector. And she immediately grows suspicious because somebody from the company said that they would be putting salt down. And she, for some reason, knows that you put salt down to keep out ghosts. Like, that's related to ghosts. So these two guys must be ghost hunters. And Sam and Dean are just like, "Oh, shit. Okay, yeah, I mean, the jig is up. You figured us out. Yeah, we are that and more. But Sam starts to, he's piecing together these clues and based on information he's reading in John's journal, dad's diary, excuse me, he starts to think that this is not just a demon, it's a demon spawn. More specifically, an imp. You see, you trap an imp in a bottle, and then with that imp trapped in your bottle, you reap earthly rewards, but it dooms your soul to hell. Classic, you know, Reaper stuff. Not Reaper stuff. What are they called? Whatever. Demon stuff. The only problem is, this imp seems to have escaped, and that's probably what caused the spontaneous human combustion. Just then, just as Sam has this realization, it looks like a wall of fire appears in the doorway, coming right at them. And the boys instantly leap into action. This is, you know, we don't get a ton of action. It's, you know, it's a lot of talking, but they instantly leap into action. Not a second of hesitation. These panels are a lot of fun. They like are just like hurling like knives at it and like shooting bolts at it. Like they don't waste a second. They immediately jump into action. And so instantly identify, okay, iron hurts this thing. Like we have some method of defense here. They also know that salt stops it because there's salt down in the door and the thing couldn't get through. The only problem is now the flaming, burning, angry imp is on the other side of the door and they're trapped in this room. Effie thinks that it must be here for her because she was here when Richie put that thing into a bottle. She overheard what was happening. Maybe she didn't know what was going on. But she thinks, oh shit, like, yeah, I was here when it happened, so it must be coming after me. Dean is like, all right, this chick's cool. Just so you know, I'm a big deal monster hunter. So like, if this is what you're into, and Sam is immediately like, dude, all right, Romeo, would you fucking chill out, please? While they get into their little banter, Effie has to scream at them to be like, can you nerds, please focus up? Could you guys start arguing with each other and like get into this? Which I love that casual display of Sam and Dean. They've been in these situations 1,000 times. So why would they stop like busting each other's balls? Like, why would they stop talking to each other in a normal way? This is Tuesday to them. This is nothing. So naturally, as we came to learn, Sam is a witch. And as we learned over the course of the series, Sam is a witch. And he immediately starts flipping through John's journal, dad's diary, and just is like, okay, I found a spell. I found the spell to put the imp back into the bottle. So we should probably do that, which seems like an extreme to jump to because we just learned that doing that is very bad. But Sam starts just chanting. Like this frame is one of my favorites. It's just Sam screaming. There's speech bubbles coming out of him, but it's all like archaic. I can't read what it says. Like he's just doing magic. And as he's casting this spell, Dean immediately jumps in. He's like, holy shit, no, Sam. Like, we just learned that trapping an imp in this bottle, it's going to send your soul to hell. We can't be doing that. And as we know, these boys are going to be doing a whole lot of that kind of shit. But this is before then. This is before Dean has to sell his soul or any of that stuff. So Dean instantly jumps into protective mode. He tries to take the bottle from Sam. And Sam is fighting back like, no, this could give me answers about what happened or about the thing that killed Jess. I don't know if he thinks like, if I go to hell, I'll find out there. I don't know. We know Sam is a drama queen. We know he likes to bring the drama. So that makes sense. And Dean has just gone into full protective mode again. So he's like, I promised Dad I'd look after you. I can't be letting you condemn your soul to hell. But then while they're arguing about it, Effie grabs the bottle from them and completes the spell. Boom. It was a trick. Her name is actually Steph Windler. She is the CEO of this company. And she was the one who originally tried to bottle the imp before it was stolen from her. She was trying to recapture the imp all along. She knows who John Winchester is, at least by reputation. And she was, I think, expecting some hunter to show up here. She mentions the word, the name Bobby, but I didn't have any context for it. I didn't know if she was referring to like our Bobby or if this was like a character. I was a little confused by that. You would think, for considering there's so few words in comic books, that I would have a stronger comprehension of what's going on, but no. So it seems like this company has had a lot of success, either because she sold her soul with this little imp situation, or because Richie, the one who previously died, did. I wasn't 100% clear on that. Either way, Richie ended up taking the bottle, probably trying to have some personal success for himself. Yeah, you know what? He was celebrating in the first panel. Richie clearly stole this magic imp bottle, thinking, now that I've got it, I'm going to be the one who gets to reap the rewards. And then he accidentally fell over and the thing popped open and got loose. So that makes sense. So this woman just has rebottled the imp, and she's like, all right, cool. No sweat. Job done.
Ghost gone, jaw gone. I'm good, dude. Thanks. Smell you later, boys.
And she says something about like, hey, maybe you guys should rethink coming to help me out for real. Come work for me. Do some shit like this. Because what you're doing now, it does not pay. The entire kind of like the framing of this issue is that Sam and Dean are really broke. and you know, the credit card fraud can only get you so far in this universe. So, but yeah, they obviously don't want to go work for her. This isn't necessarily like antagonistic, because they do stop the monster. And if the woman has decided to condemn herself, that's like, they don't want to let that happen. But it's also kind of like, okay, well, that was her choice. She willingly knew what she was doing. And there's nothing they can do about it right now anyway. So, okay. I wonder, obviously, I've only read the first issue. I do not know if this will come up again, if she will reappear. But after the boys are in the car, they're talking about the case. They're, you know, surprised that this woman tricked them. She sold her soul. And they're like, you know, we saved her life, but Sam is kind of, he's lamenting the fact that like, how are we supposed to do this? You know, we have all these notes, we have all this experience. It seems like there should be rules. We know how to deal with ghosts. We know how to deal with vampires, but then there's just, how can we really do any actual good in this world when there's always going to be regular people who are bad? People like this woman, Effie, who was just like, yeah, I'll just sell my soul. Who gives a shit? For profit. Not because out of desperation, not any out of great need. It's just, she just wanted to make more money. And it's one of those rare moments where I'm surprised to even get it in this comic book, where it just takes half a step outside of itself to be like, yeah, dude, shit's fucked. Yeah, we can hunt every vampire in Louisiana, but if awful people are still marching around, then that's out of our hands. We can't do anything about that. And they're still broke. So this episode ends with Dean being like, I have a solution to us being broke. We're going to Vegas. And that's that. That's the first issue of this comic book. You know what? It got the job done pretty quickly. It follows the same format. I think that's the entire issue is just over 20 pages, because there's like, the whole thing is like 30 something pages, but it's like extra cover art and stuff like that at the end. So, yeah, it's just about 24 pages for this first issue. They accomplish a lot. We get the cold open. We get the setup. You know, some of the details weren't always entirely clear to me. That could be a reading comprehension issue. But overall, I was actually impressed. This felt like a run-of-the-mill episode of season one, season two. I love those seasons. It's been a long time. It feels very nice to revisit the characters. If this comic book came out at the height of Supernatural's popularity, I could definitely see it kind of almost being dismissed, because it's like, all right, this is just another episode. Like, who cares? But the show's been over for 5 years at this point, almost 6 years. And I haven't revisited very much in that time. So for me, it was kind of a trip down memory lane. It felt like they had the right vibes, shading, coloring, characterization. All of it was there. Was it perfect? No, but it was there. And it seems like the people who created this are actual fans of it. And that's always nice to see. So I am very curious to see where we go from here. What's next? Is this woman going to show back up again? Are there any threads that they're going to pull on? Is there stuff that's going to build over time? I don't know. So I will, I'll look forward to those. And I hope that my voice has not been too awful to listen to. I hope that me doing this alone hasn't been too bad. I just thought, you know, I got to get back on the horse at some point, and Jeremy and I definitely would have covered this together. So I just got to do what I can, right? And well, anyway, thank you for checking this out. This I'm going to put on the public feed. I think everything else will just be on for the patrons like usual. So thank you again for checking this out, and I hope that if you pick up the comic that you have a good time with it, and hopefully it will only get better from here. So thank you, everybody. Until next time, I think we say stay spooky. I don't know if that was just an X-Files thing, but stay spooky, everybody.
As far as dad goes, I dream about dad all the time.
You do?
Of course I do. It's usually the same point, too. We're all in the car, I'm sitting in the driver's seat, dad's sitting shotgun, but there aren't any shotguns. There's no monsters, there's no hunting, there's none of that. It's just, he's teaching me how to drive. I'm not little like I was when he actually taught me how to drive. I'm 16, and he's helping me get my learner's permit. Of course, you're in the back seat, just begging to take a turn. Pull up to the house, the family house. I park in the driveway, and he looks over and he says, perfect landing, son. I had that dream every couple of months. Kind of comforting, actually. I always dream about mom.